Hey, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Peer-to-Peer Real Estate Show. I'm your host, Willie Morales. And on today's show, we have a young entrepreneur by the name of Igor. Igor, pronounce your last name because I don't want to mess it up.
Kajpust.
Kajpust?
Yep.
Okay. So Igor is a 20-year-old full-time real estate investor and an entrepreneur. He's running businesses and he does flipping all over the country, which we're going to talk about definitely today. So Igor, tell me about yourself. How did you get started in the real estate business?
Sure
thing. Or just as an entrepreneur from the start?
Yeah. Definitely in business in general. So I mean, going way back, I was born in Poland, brought over here as a first generation immigrant by my lovely parents. And so, I mean, ever since I was young, I mean, neither of my parents spoke any English. So I was kind of like, I was in fourth, fifth grade, I'd be calling the bank for my dad, trying to like, you know, talk to credit card companies and stuff as a little kid. So I just kind of, from a young age, had experience with dealing with people. And then I'd like sell stuff on eBay for him when I was a little kid, because he didn't know how to use it and whatnot. So I mean, and then you started going off on my own. Like I'd get 50 bucks here from selling all this stuff for him. And I'd take that 50 bucks and I'd go to the garage sale and buy some like printer cartridges and sell them on eBay and make a couple bucks. So, I mean, ever since I was a little kid, I was really buying and selling stuff. I was just trying to save up money for no reason other than the fact that I liked having money.
So, yeah. I
mean, first businesses were like selling stuff on eBay like that. When we were in third grade, me and a friend would go into Aldi's, which was a grocery store in Illinois. We'd go pick up like a six pack of Propel water, throw them in a cooler, yeah. Go in the parking lot and sell them to people for a dollar. So, I mean, ever since I was a little kid, you know, always just selling stuff, buying and selling stuff, and then transitioned into real estate down the line. I mean, I was about 17 years old when I bought my first piece of real estate, just kind of just like experimental. It was $800 or so, $750 on an auction site. Bought a piece of land in Colorado. I still have it to this day. It's probably still worth $700, but taxes are $5 a year, so I'm not worried about it. But I mean, I don't know. I think I kind of had a little bug in me ever since I was a little kid. I was always interested in trying to, you know, make money and come up with new ways to try and make something happen.
Yeah. You know, I just find that amazing, Igor, that a guy your age, that young, that you knew you wanted to be an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. What was that aha moment when it came to real estate? Where mm-hmm. was it that you said, hey, you know what, let me do real estate?
Yeah, so there was kind of a big aha moment with entrepreneurship in general. So like I was just saying, I was always selling stuff, but I didn't really have like the thought like, oh, I'm going to be an entrepreneur or whatever. I was just like, oh, I can make 50 bucks if I sell this phone or whatever. But the big aha moment, I actually did an MLM or a pyramid scheme or whatever. Vima, I'm sure a lot of people have heard of it. A lot of people have had their friends call them and say, hey, you're about this opportunity. But I did that in my senior year of high school. I did it for about 2 months. It was awesome for like a month and then I just failed at it. But I mean, it was that thing, just getting around like-minded people in that group. And we started studying like Zig Ziglar and Les Brown and this motivational stuff and just researching success, you know, in general. And that was my big aha. I was like, okay, I'm going to be an entrepreneur. I want to do big things with my life. You know, I think a little differently than most people. So that was the big kind of aha for me. And then another year or two down the line, you know, I was still doing little side businesses. After that, I had it was selling cars on Craigslist. So I'd buy a car, turn around, flip it. That's how I saved up a lot of my like starting capital for real estate. And then I had like a business where I'd sell pipes, like bongs and stuff on Amazon. Dude, I sold like 121 of these things in 10 days before Amazon shut me down.
Really? Wow.
But I mean, and then, you know, once that business got shut down, I had like 2 months and I was like, all right, man, I need to focus on this real estate stuff, and had a little bit of money saved up from all the business stuff and just decided to go full time. I knew real estate was going to be the biggest paycheck. So that's why I picked that one.
So how did you discover, you know, the Les Browns, you know, Tony Robbins and those type of people? How did you discover them? Like, did somebody tell you about them, or you just happened to like one day, you know, be on YouTube and that's how you found them?
Yeah. So the biggest thing was Vima. Like I said, it was that MLM. You know, I made $300 working there 2 months, just grinding every day. I made $300. So there's not, you know, no money made, but it was those people, you know, my uplines or whatever, the other people that were doing Vima. they would show motivational videos at the meetings and whatnot, and they would show, hey, research this Tony Robbins guy, hey, read this Think and Grow Rich book. And that was what really got me started into it. And then, like, I picked up Rich Dad Poor Dad. That was the first book I read, and I picked up Think and Grow Rich. And from there, it just went like crazy spiral. I just went on Amazon, started buying everything that had millionaire in the title, and just like reading all the stuff that I could. So it was really just kind of that first initial thing. And then I went out on my own, just trying to, you know, gather as much information as I could and learn as much as I could as quick as possible.
Yeah, no, I'm with you, because I'm a big fan of those guys too. So I'm always buying books like that. So what was the first business that you started? Like, you know, that you could say officially, was it selling the Propel water or?
Yeah, I don't think that was really an official business. I mean, we went out a couple times and sold a few water bottles, but it was kind of just like a fun thing to do. The first real business, I'd say, was probably Northwest Computer Repair, which was, I was probably 16 years old or so. And that was kind of my business for when I was, that was the first one I got business cards for. Those were my first business cards. So that's what, you know, that's how you make it official.
Okay, good.
I advertise on Craigslist and then go like on Facebook groups and all that stuff. It was called Home of the $30 Deals. So I'd wipe your hard drive for 30 bucks, or I'd replace your cracked laptop screen for 30 bucks. So I was like 16 years old. I had these dudes dropping off computers at my parents' house, and I was in there with my little screwdriver sets, like fixing computers and phones and doing it for people, and also buying them and selling them myself. So that was probably the first like real kind of business, I would say, that I did.
Well, if you have a business card, yeah, that is your first business. So what is a day like for you, since you're, you know, a full-time entrepreneur? What is it, how do you schedule your day and structure it?
Yep. So right now, kind of how it pans out, this might get a little long because I've got kind of a routine that I go through, but I'll wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning, and I've got stuff recorded on my phone. So I've got like a bunch of affirmations, my goals, all that stuff recorded on my phone. So as soon as I wake up, I'll put that on. Just listen, get my mind right first thing in the morning. Then I journal. So if people take notes on this, this is an awesome morning journal for you to do. Every morning, I write down 3 things that I'm grateful for. Then I write down 3 things that would make today amazing. I write down a couple affirmations, like, you know, money flows to me, I am wealthy, just affirmations. Then I write down 5 goals, my 5 biggest goals right now. And then at the end of the day, you go back and you reflect. You see 3 things that you're super grateful for that happened that day, and then 1 thing that you could have done better. So that's a morning journal I do every single morning. It takes about 5-10 minutes.
Right.
I'll go up. I have a gym in my condo building. I'll go up, work out for a little bit. I usually, that's like 3 times a week. Come back down, make some breakfast, eat breakfast, and then by about 8 a.m. every day, I'm ready to head off to the office. And that's where we're at here now. We're at my main office in Denver. And we'll start hitting the phones, whatever we have planned out for that day. So the night before, I always go through. I have a master list of my just general stuff that I need to do. So I write everything on there that comes to my mind. And the night before, I look at that master list and plan out my day in like hour intervals or so, and try to just squeeze the most that I can into 1 day of those tasks.
And that's an amazing thing. So you do 3 things you're grateful for. And what was the other one after that? The 3 things that you have.
You're grateful for, then 3 things that would make the day amazing. So you're kind of putting that out there into the universe. This is the 3 things that would make my day great. You know, if these things happened, today would have been success.
Right. Then you have the 3 affirmations.
That's right. Then you have some affirmations. So you know, I am wealthy, I am clear in my pursuits, the universe is helping me with whatever, you know, I'm trying to achieve. Then your goals, whatever goals you have, it might be 2, it might be 5, just write down your goals in general. So I put like 6 to 12 month goals on that part. And then at the end of the day, you come back, kind of reflect on the day, 3 awesome things that happened that day, and then a little sentence on what you maybe could have improved during that day.
I like that. No, I like that.
Tim Ferriss's morning journal, but there's a couple different changes in there from how he does it. So I think I got that from the Tim Ferriss podcast a long time ago and kind of put my own flair on it.
I know I saw one time, Igor, it was an interview with Tony Robbins, and he was saying that he has, I think for 10 minutes, he does like 3 minutes of affirmations, I think 3 minutes of what he's grateful for, and I think I forgot what was the other one, maybe 4 minutes of, I guess, what he wants to accomplish for the day. So that's pretty good. It's like a 10-minute thing. He said if you don't have 10 minutes.
Yeah, then you don't have
day, yeah, exactly. so what are you currently working on right now?
So right now we're actually in the office. I have someone flew in from Chicago, and I'm training them up. We've got two main businesses that we're working on right now, or I'm working on right now. I've got Evolving Home Solutions, which is my real estate company, where we're a nationwide home buyer. We buy and flip properties all over the country with a focus on Chicago and a focus on Central Florida. And so that's my main business right now. My partner who's in Florida is managing the majority of that business while I'm here in Denver trying to build out our direct mail marketing company. So we have a full service direct mail marketing company that we recently started. And basically we take care of all the direct mail marketing, the lists, the letters, the stuff in the stamping, the, you know, mailing and everything for real estate investors and realtors, because it's a staple in a lot of, you know, investors and realtors marketing is that direct mail. And we literally have, you know, prices 15 to 40 cents cheaper than the competition. So I'm focusing on building this business out, just building the sales team around it and the right infrastructure, so that I can build this thing to kind of run on its own and a couple months down the line, pop back full time into the real estate business and continue to grow that.
Igor, talk about more about your direct mail business, because that's interesting, because all of us that are in the real estate business, you know, that's, like you said, that's important to have. What would be the minimum that you, let's say your company would accept in terms of direct mail? Is there a minimum, maximum? How would you work that?
For our direct mail orders, our minimums are 500 pieces, which is, you know, we really recommend. If you're not sending 500 pieces, you're probably not going to. The minimum's 500. We can do as many as you want, and we're fully customizable. So if you want a pink letter with purple ink and a green envelope, you know, we can get that done for you. We've got really, like I said, the absolute best pricing in the industry. We're 55 cents for big volume orders, up to 71 cents for small orders. So if you're doing 500 pieces, it'll be 71 cents for you. And that's still, like I said, most of the competition starts at 85 cents or so. So we're way under there price wise. And then also for anyone that's listening, I like to extend kind of a free offer if I could plug myself.
No, of course, please do.
Free marketing consultation for you, because I personally send out about 10,000 pieces of mail for my real estate business every single month. So I've got a fair amount of knowledge and you know, kind of can help guide you in the right direction in terms of what list you want to hit, what mail piece would be the best, how often to hit these people. And so if you want to give us a call, I could personally get on the phone with you for 10 minutes and go over your marketing plan, see what would work best for you.
Yeah, no, give out your number. I mean, because at towards the end of the show, we're definitely going to ask for, you know, where could people find you? So if you want to wait till then or give it now, either or is fine with me.
If you're calling for that consultation, just let me know you heard us on Willie's podcast here, and the number is going to be 720-295-1690.
So repeat that again, Igor.
720-295-295. Yep, 1690.
1690. Okay, there you go, folks. You heard that.
Newprint.com. Push the number 2 print.com.
Okay, so it's push the number 2 print.com. Okay. So, Igor, you know, the one thing I wanted to talk to you about, since you're investing, let's say, like you said, in what is it, Central Florida and Chicago are your main areas?
Main markets.
Right. Okay. So if you're doing something, let's say in Philadelphia for, you know, hypothetical, how would you, if you don't mind, if you give us, let's say like a 5-step process or a 7-step process, because sure. If you're in Denver, I'm assuming you don't have anyone that you know there. How would that work?
So it's a little bit tougher to do it in markets where you don't have anyone, because then you're relying on referrals or, you know, like different websites where you could find people, maybe like Craigslist, which tends to not always be the most reliable. So it's good to work in markets where you have at least a connection or a connection of a connection, just someone you can reach out to. But so the kind of a 5-step process, I'd say we have marketing that goes out. So say we'll send out some marketing to Pennsylvania, and then the seller will respond. We'll take that call through our office here in Denver, will screen the lead through one of my lead managers who takes calls. They'll be like, okay, this person has a house. It's not listed. It's inherited. It needs a bunch of work. It sounds like they're pretty motivated. Let's see if we can get someone that's on the ground to go over, take a look at the property, maybe talk to the seller a little bit, snap a couple pictures for us.
Right.
Go back and then negotiate with the seller once we have an idea of what it needs in repairs. We also ask the seller, we're like, hey, you know, it's important that you're honest here. What do you think the property is going to need in repairs? We're going to base our offer off of this number, so it's important that you're honest with us. So, you know, they'll tell us what they think it's worth. We'll kind of go off of theirs. If we have pictures, we'll go off of both, because sometimes someone needs, house is trash. They're like, oh, it needs $5,000. It's like, you know, so we go off kind of both. Give them an offer. If they like it, we'll send over our contract. We use DocuSign to send over electronic contracts. That way anyone can sign them right on their phone or computer, whatever it may be. And once we have the contract back, then we start shopping the property. So we'll have buyers. We don't have any other inspections or contractors or anything. We'll get a couple solid buyers, maybe 1, 2, 3 really solid buyers that we know can close the deal, and we'll send them out there. Usually we like to have a lockbox on the property so they don't have to interact with the seller. But if they do have to interact with the seller, most of the time buyers know not to talk price. We tell the buyer, hey, we're wholesaling this deal. Just keep the price quiet. Take a look at the place. Let me know what you think. And then once we get there, if we can get a buyer that wants the property, they just close it, their title company. It's out of our hands. We just send over our agreements and wait for the check.
Yeah. Okay. No, that seems pretty simple enough, right? I guess the toughest part is just, you know, if you're wholesaling in another city and you don't have a team there. So you recommend if you're going to wholesale or do any type of investing in another city, try to have somebody that you know. That's what you recommend, or?
Because how I started my business, I started with Google Ads, and I started by targeting the entire state of Indiana, the entire state of Illinois, the entire state of Wisconsin, the entire state of Michigan. And I was getting leads in cornfields and everywhere, and just like no people on the ground. And it took me forever. And that way it was a much slower way to get my business started. It's much easier if, say, you work in, you know, you live in a crazy market like Los Angeles or San Francisco and you can't wholesale there, or you want to try a different market, maybe do a campaign for buyers in Chicago if you want to invest there. So do a direct mail campaign there, get a couple of serious buyers, say Tom is looking for a 3-2 in these couple of zip codes in Chicago, and then now you've got your ammo. You're not really, you know, you're not scrambling looking for deals all over the place and then scrambling trying to sell them. You've got exact criteria of what that buyer is looking for, and then you're just going shopping. So when you pull your list, you can get like a list, 3-2s in this zip code, and send exactly what Tom's looking for. Send all those people mail. And then when you have a deal, be like, hey, Tom, go check this place out. I don't have it under contract yet. You know, I trust you, though. Why don't you go take a look at it, see what you think, how much you think you could pay, and then I'll talk to the seller. We'll make this thing happen. You know, and that way it's a lot easier if you have at least some sort of contact on the ground, especially if it's a buyer, it just makes it so much easier.
Okay, no, that's a great point. So I guess you get your, like, with your leads, are you using a list source, or how do you get your leads, or where do you find your leads?
So we work with a ton of list providers since we also have the direct mail company. So we can pretty much get you anything you want. If you want pre-foreclosures, 30, 60, 90 day notice of defaults, or if you want, you know, tax default properties, if you want vacant properties, if you want owners over 65 years old in Philadelphia that have had their house for 10 years and it's worth $200,000 or less, we can get you that stuff too. So we don't use list source. It's more of like a retail kind of thing, just because we get bulk lists and stuff. I use Rebo Gateway, though, still. It's kind of a retail provider, but we still use Rebo Gateway. They're really good for tax defaults if they have them in your county.
Yeah, I use Rebo Gateway for Philadelphia and a Delaware county in Philadelphia, and you're right. And I also, you know, too, Igor, I started using the county websites because they also have a tax list. Sometimes they might have like 200-something names. So wow. I started making that recently, and I found that by luck. I was just playing around with the websites, and I put tax liens or tax defaults, and all of a sudden, I got a spreadsheet.
Whoa! Straight from the county site.
So, straight from the county site, but the thing is, though, Igor, it tells you who is the lawyer and when it's going to go for auction, and it gives you like opening bid. On, you know, compared to Rebo Gateway, it gives you the owner, and but it doesn't tell you if it's going up for auction. The county side does tell you that, though.
That's awesome. Yeah, because some counties, like in Chicago, if you want to find tax defaults, good luck. Cook County is not helping you with that stuff. You know, yeah. So there's some counties where it's crazy, but that's really good. They have it in your counties. So anyone that's listening, definitely check the county site first, because you can get, if your county can get you like probate records or, you know, tax default records, divorce records, bankruptcy filings, some counties.
That I haven't found yet, but that's a good point. So what was the site that you use? Is that part of your company?
Yeah, so we work with like a bunch of smaller local companies. Like in Chicago, we have a really good small company that does pre-foreclosure stuff for us. So it's going to depend on, you know, where you're at. But another good
is
one.
Is it all over the country, Igor, or it's
that one? That one is just Illinois. For that's one example, but we can, you know, we reach out to different companies and kind of get bulk pricing and then help, you know, get it to our customers. But good ones that I used are ListSource is okay. It's a little pricey because you're paying upwards like 20 cents per name sometimes, depending on your criteria. That can get pricey. ListSource does have a feature. If you plan on using them a lot, you can buy, I think I bought 15,000 names once when I was first starting out. I used probably 3,000 of them, but you can buy like a bulk thing, 15,000 names.
Right.
11 cents a name or something. But ListSource is good. They have good information. If you want just general information, you can hit like yourleadbroker.com. They have good, if you want to pull like people 60 and over in a whole county, you can do stuff like that through them. But ListSource, Rebo Gateway are the big two I'd use if you're just doing smaller mailings yourself. Yeah.
Okay. You know, and it's funny because since you talk about the leads, for your business or for any real estate investor, how important is direct mail or at least trying to get leads? I mean, obviously, it's good to have a pipeline of leads.
Yeah.
And you said that the minimum that someone should send out, especially if they're brand new, is 500. Mm-hmm. If they're on a budget, is that still enough to send out? I mean, 500 in your opinion?
Yeah. So I mean, man, if you're not marketing, if you're not searching for leads, however you're doing it, if you're not marketing, your business is dying, because our business is based entirely on how many leads we can bring in and how many of those leads we can convert.
Right.
So you're not marketing, you know, say you got two contracts right now because you sent out 500 letters and you're super excited and you stop marketing for like a month while you're selling these leads, then you don't have any new leads to work on while you know, when you stop marketing. So it's important, like, you know, even if you're running out of money, like, you know, Kent Clothier will say of REWW, Memphis Invest. I mean, these guys sold like 640 houses last year. And they're like, dude, even if you're like totally out of money, figure out how to get some money and market. Because, I mean, that's the way that you keep money flowing into the business. You have to invest it in the marketing. I don't care if it's direct mail. You know, if you don't have any money, go to the dollar store, get some boards and some sticks and make some bandit signs. But you need to keep marketing. You need to keep putting your name out there so that sellers can find you, because that's how you're going to make your money. If you're not marketing, you're not doing anything and you're not going to be doing any business.
Right. No, I agree. What do you think about the free sites, the Zillows, Trulias, Craigslist?
That's something that you have absolutely no money, go to your county, go to Zillow, look at for sale by owner and start calling everyone.
Right.
And that's good practice. I would even maybe suggest doing that before you send out mail. Just so you can practice on the phone talking to sellers and getting shut down when you give them ridiculous offers.
Yeah, exactly.
Good way. They're free leads, basically, because people that have houses listed for sale by owner, that person is a seller. That's, you know, maybe just as good of a lead as you're going to get off a direct mail campaign off someone that has a house that's listed with a realtor, you know. So definitely that's a good thing. Totally free. Go to Zillow.com. Go to, you know, Philadelphia for sale by owners. And start calling. Just be like, hey, Jeff, I saw you got your house for sale. You know, tell me a little bit about it. Oh, okay. You're selling it because you had to move for work. I mean, how quick do you want to sell the thing? Oh, man, I need it gone in like 3 weeks. Oh, okay, Jeff, you mind if I swing by, take a look at it? You know, go check it out. Kind of just start, gets your juices flowing, start talking to sellers, start getting in there. And it's a good way to do it for free, for sure.
Yeah. Now, is there in your marketing or in your criteria for to buy properties, are you in a price point, or you pretty much will hit anything in that meets your criteria, 3 to 1,000 minimum square footage?
Yeah, so we'll hit pretty much anything. Like I said about the buyer thing, if you can have a buyer lined up first, if you can do some buyer marketing first, that's really good too, just to you know exactly what your buyers are looking for, because you might lock up a $1 million house that's worth 1.5, but then you need to scramble try to sell it. You know, you're gonna be putting it on Craigslist, you're gonna be talking to realtors, you're gonna be trying to figure out how to sell it. If you already have a buyer lined up, it kind of eliminates all that for you. But to answer your question, personally, we don't really have any super specific criteria. We just look for people that are motivated,
and then right,
deal, you know, we can make a deal.
So getting back to the finding the buyer first before the property, can you repeat the process again? How would you do that? Especially if, let's say I'm in New York City and I want to try, let's say, Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. What would I send a letter, or how would I get a buyer's list, or should I talk to a realtor? What would you suggest?
So say you're going to Indianapolis. First thing I do, you can call realtors, kind of, you know, see what kind of cash buyers they're working with, because a lot of realtors will have investors that buy for cash that are looking for properties. And you tell the realtor, hey, my name's John, I get off-market properties in Indianapolis, and usually I can get them at better prices than the deals that are on the MLS. Say if I found you a really good deal, do you have a good buyer that would be able to close on this thing quickly, and we could maybe, you know, I could throw you a few $1,000s? Well, let's do it. Let me grab your information, blah, blah, blah. Another way is going back to the county sites. You can see properties that have recently sold, and you can do this on ListSource. I think there are videos on YouTube, how to find cash buyers on ListSource. You don't to see how many there are, you just put in your filters. The video will go into more detail, but you can basically see which properties have sold for cash in that zip code or in that area in the past, whatever date you choose. So choose like in the last year in Indianapolis, properties that have traded hands and have 100% equity. So meaning they, you know, there's no loan on them. They are bought for cash. So that's another good way to try and find buyers. And then marketing, whoops, sorry about that, Willie.
That's okay.
And then marketing, put ads on Craigslist. You know, I have deals for cash. You could put bandit signs. If you have anyone that's on the ground in Indianapolis, have them put bandit signs like, you know, 3-2 for sale, 45,000, put them in a neighborhood where you're doing marketing, or just put fixer-uppers for sale, whatever it is. That's a really good way to get buyers, especially like where I'm at in Denver. If you put out a sign that says fixer-uppers for sale, your phone's not going to stop ringing until the sign goes down. So,
oh, wow. Okay.
Get over here. But the bandit signs are a good way also to get some cash buyers. So I'd say that would be, you know, bandit signs are great, realtors are great, Craigslist, and definitely county records is, I'd say, number one though. And you can do a direct mail campaign, you know, to the owners of those properties that have bought for cash.
You know, Igor, so where do you see in the next 3 to 6 months the market going in real estate? Do you still see it rising, especially with Trump being the president, or do you see it stabilizing? Because it seems like it's more of a seller's market now than it was a few years ago.
No, it's definitely way more of a seller's market now. You know, I wasn't really investing in 2006, 7, 8, 9. I think I was still selling phones at that point. But, you know, I really don't know. I don't think anyone can really say. We can guess and see, you know, what's going to happen. But the trends look like it's still going to keep going up through this year. And I'm personally hoping for my business that it still keeps kind of climbing through this year. And then, you know, who knows what's going to happen. But it does move in cycles. 2008 was the last crash. It's been almost 10 years since the last downturn. We've been on the steady uphill climb since like 2010. So, I mean, I can feel it coming sooner rather than later, but I can't pinpoint, you know, in the next 3 to 6 months, what you said, I think it's going to continue to climb. I don't see it coming crashing down. I think if it was to come down this year, it would be, you know, near the winter months, near fall, winter.
Sure.
So I guess 6 months, but I'm hoping it does, and I still want to stack some more cash before it comes tumbling down.
Yeah, no, I understand that, and I agree. Now, is most of your real estate deals pretty much wholesaling, or do you do any buy and hold, any creative financing, or pretty much is just straight out cut dry wholesaling?
Mm-hmm. So it has been historically pretty much wholesaling. I mean, I've got two properties that I own right now. One of them's on the market. It was kind of a creative flip for me. So guy had a $15,000 mortgage, and then he had like a $15,000 second position loan and some other like tax liens. So what I did was I negotiated a second position loan. So it was 15. I was like, hey, this guy, I called him. I was like, hey, this guy's going to foreclosure. You guys are going to lose this thing. You're not going to get anything. I'll give you $3,000 now to just settle this thing. So I got rid of the second position. That was 15,000. I wiped it off for three. I gave the guy like 4,000 bucks to walk away, and I took over the mortgage. So I put a roof on that thing, put it some new windows, a couple of new windows in it, and then it's on the market right now. So hopefully we can get that thing sold. That one should be like a $30,000 profit, hopefully, and only took me like 15 grand put into it. So those creative deals are good too. But I am I'm trying to focus on wholesaling now. We're looking at parking some cash in rentals in Northwest Indiana into the like really cheap stuff where you can get a property for 10 grand and rent it out for 650. So I'm looking to park some money there, but currently I don't have any buy and holds, just those couple properties. So sometimes I'll buy them and flip them if I can make a little more money, but wholesaling.
Yeah. You know, it's funny that you said that about, you know, a $10,000 property. I was doing some research on, I think, realtor.com, mm-hmm. and I saw, like, in Indianapolis, Kansas City, St. Louis, Pittsburgh, I think Milwaukee, Igor, and I put, you know, 35 and under, and I think each of those cities must have anywhere from, like, 50 to a couple of hundred properties that were available. That and that shocked me because I figured in this market, that's the last thing I'll see, you know, that those houses that are cheap. I mean, like in, I think it was in Indianapolis, and you go, some of those properties were in decent shape according to the pictures. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure if the area is like a war zone. I don't think so. I don't think a property like that would last. But what do you think of, you know, about that when you see properties that are still in the in that low figure, that especially in those cities?
Mm-hmm. That stuff is dangerous. So that was my second deal. After I bought the land, it's funny you say Indianapolis, because I bought the land. That was my first deal. A couple months later, same auction site, little nice house in Indianapolis for sale. I was like, wow, okay, let's see where this goes. It was at like $3,000. I was like, that's freaking crazy. So I was looking at like public records and stuff. I was like, oh, it last sold for $17,000. It was listed on the retail market for like $29,000 a couple months ago. And now it's for sale on this auction site. I could pick the same thing up for a few thousand bucks. So we ended up bidding on it. We won it for $7,500. I went half and half with a friend. At that point, you know, I didn't have that much money. So we bought it half and half for $7,500. And we didn't know what a quit claim deed was at that point. So the bank quit claims this thing to us in Indianapolis for $7,500. I go over there. We drive there from Chicago, 3-hour drive to go look at it. War zone. We go look. I mean, we thought, we looked at the pictures. We're like, oh, we'll put some cabinets in it and we'll paint it. We can probably go there with some friends and knock it out in a couple of days. I went and looked at it. It was like all the drywall was falling off the ceiling because the roof has been bad for so long. So it was all just getting wet and falling down. It's like half a foot of water in the basement. And the place was just trashed. And then so we're like, all right, screw it. We're going to put this back on Craigslist and just sell it. We put it up for like 10 grand. And we get someone, we finally get like an offer. And then we go to close and there's like, hey, there's $8,500 of liens against this thing. And we're like, what the fuck? But long story short, I mean, it took us like 6 months to sell the thing. We got it sold on Craigslist for $8,500, quit claim deed and just got rid of it. And yeah, so that was our first war zone experience. So I don't have more experience in those areas. I do have people on the south side of Chicago that buy properties like that. I mean, a lot of the deals, I just sold a deal for 33. We're closing this week. So, but I mean, that property is going to be worth 150 when it's fixed up. It's just in rough shape. But I mean, those areas are rough. We want to go back into Northwest Indiana and I want to go there personally. We're going to go look at some deals and see and just kind of risk a little bit of money, buy one or two of these houses and see how we can handle it. But the areas are rough, people steal your stuff, and the ARV is not there. If you're buying them, you're gonna wanna hold on to them. You could put it on the retail market and wait and hopefully sell it someday, but it's not, you know, it's not a neighborhood where people wanna live, it's a neighborhood where people have to live. So it's kind of recession-proof in that sense, because people are always gonna live there even if, you know, the market crashes and everyone loses their jobs. The government's paying for the stuff anyways, so, you know, you're still going to keep getting paid, but it's just a matter of managing those tenants and then turnover, repairs, all that stuff. So it's still something we're going to be testing. But for new investors, if you're new, don't, if you see a $5,000 property and you get excited, I wouldn't buy it. Unless you're local and you know the area, I would. It's risky business.
Yeah, no. And you got a lesson out of that, which is amazing, because, you know, you're lucky that you went over there, because, and for our listeners, can you explain more what's a quit claim deed?
Yeah. So what a quit claim deed is when a property has liens or encumbrances against it, meaning like a mortgage would be a lien, or like, you know, if you have an IRS tax warrant, they can put a lien against your property. If you have child support that you owe, they could put a lien against your property. So when you go to sell that house in a traditional way, the money comes out, straight out of it and goes to those lien holders. So when you're going to closing, say you sell your property for 50, but you have 20 in liens on it, then you're going to get 30 and the 20,000 is going to go to pay off the lien holders. On a quit claim, you're just assigning your interest in the property to someone else. So you're basically giving them the property and then all the liens stay on it. So the liens don't get wiped off. So when someone's trying to sell you a property on a quit claim deed, 90% of the time, it's going to have liens on it. Be very careful when people are trying to sell you stuff on quit claims. Get a title search done always, because you're going to get screwed. If you don't get a title search done, you buy something, you can buy a property that's worth 50 and it can have 50,000 of liens on it. So you can get really, really screwed. So call the title company, call me, get a title search done for like 50 bucks, and they'll tell you what liens are on the property. But I just go pay the title insurance, pay the regular closing costs, and close at a local title company just so you have, you know, peace of mind that those liens aren't going to come back and bite you in the butt later on.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, that's an amazing lesson, because, for the banks or whoever, they don't care. They just, hey, you're going to take it. Obviously, yeah, you're like, obviously, you took the quit claim deed, so you knew what you were doing. So, hey, take it. And but that's a lesson learned. Not too many people know about that. And by you experience that, you could tell your friends and obviously the listeners here, hey, watch this. Mm-hmm. Make sure you know what you're doing before you invest in a property that you don't know anything about. And I think the title search is key. Mm-hmm. Have you dealt with tax liens and tax deeds, or would that be something that you'd be interested down the road, or are you doing that now, or?
Yeah, personally, I don't do anything with tax deed or tax lien investing. It could be a good strategy for, it's just not something that really interested in me all that much. It is a good way, though. It's kind of a safer way to make your money. I know a guy that he lives here in Denver. He's actually a private lender of mine. And this guy buys, like, I think he bought 800 tax liens in Phoenix, Arizona last year. So he buys, that's his main business, and he kills it with that stuff. So you can definitely do well with it. Tax liens are great, but it's not something I have much experience with.
Okay. No, that's neither do I. I just, because, all these gurus that talk about, when you have these boot camps and they have, they do subject to tax liens, wholesale lease options, it's like your head is spinning because you don't know where to start. It seems like when you started, you kind of knew where you wanted to go, right? I mean, mm-hmm. Did you already have the niche that picked out when you got into real estate?
Yeah. So when I was first starting, I wanted to get into flipping. And I was like trying to get hard money loans and buy a property. And I had like 25 grand saved up from all my other businesses. And I was like, oh, I'm going to flip properties. Wholesaling's like where everyone starts. I want to start flipping because it's way cooler. And then I tried that for a few months. I couldn't get any deals. I was like, okay, I'm just going to wholesale. But it's good to focus on one thing. There's no get rich quick. There's not one, strategy that you're going to pick and then you're going to be a millionaire next week because you buy this tax lien. It's going to be more so pick one of these strategies, one that you can understand and one that you think you'll be able to, manage and handle for a longer period of time. Because the gurus will pitch you, I'll make $100,000 a deal doing, lease options or whatever. But it's really important to just focus on one thing and stick to it. Don't keep jumping from one thing to the other, because then you're really just, spinning your wheels and not doing much. Really just focus on one thing. If you want to do lease options, just go all in lease options and try and do that. We're going to do tax liens. Just do tax liens. Learn as much as you can about that. Be the expert in your space, and then you'll start getting paid what you deserve for that. So that's kind of my two cents on that.
No, that's a good point. Now, would you recommend for the newbie to start wholesaling, or is that like almost a big jump to get into, especially if, unless you live in a market like, let's say, Indianapolis, Philadelphia, whatever, that you might find properties for 40, 50, 60,000. What would you recommend the newbie to get into? Or again, it's pretty much niche based.
Yeah. So I would say, depending on what kind of time commitment you have, because wholesaling is very time consuming. It's could be a job at first, right where I'm at right now, I'm trying to build it into a business where you're hiring the right people and plugging them into spots where you can kind of pull yourself out of the business. But wholesaling, is a very active business. You're going to be taking seller calls. You're going to be, putting out marketing. You're going to be looking at properties. You're going to be selling properties. If you have that kind of time commitment that you can make to it and that you want to make to it, then wholesaling. Yeah. And it's a good spot to start for newbies because it's not very risky. you know, it sucks and it happens, you know, get a property under contract, you can't sell it, you kind of screwed the seller over, and that's not good, and you really shouldn't do that. But, you know, it's better than buying a, you know, a $50,000, having $50,000 into a junker in Indianapolis that's worth 10, and then you're losing, you know, half your kids' college fund or whatever, rather than, you know, telling the seller, I'm so sorry, I'm kind of new to this, to be honest, blah, 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 whatever, I messed up. But wholesaling is a safe way to get into it, requires more time commitment. But if you're, you know, if you're like an executive and you have a bunch of money saved up and you don't have the time to focus on wholesaling since you're working on your professional career, but you just want some income from real estate, then rental properties in more stable markets, maybe pick up a, you know, a duplex in like a C-plus neighborhood, blue collar working class neighborhood, it's a safer bet, and then you'll have that mailbox money as long as you can manage it correctly, and you know, it's not as much of a time commitment as wholesaling. But wholesaling, yeah, is good for people that have a time commitment and are new. I recommend wholesaling, so it's the least risky way to get into it, and you can make some quick checks that you can later then invest into other, you know, facets of real estate.
Great. All right, no, great advice. Let me ask you a couple of questions before we finish. What do you think about the new crowdfunding sites? You know, you got these sites like Fundrise, Realty Shares, I think Realty Mogul. What do you think about those sites? Especially since, you know, like some of these sites will take a minimum of $1,000 from the newbie investor. I mean, you don't have to be accredited. What do you think about those sites?
Yeah, so I haven't personally have no experience with them. I've heard a lot about Realty Shares. So you're saying as an investment for someone that has cash and they're looking to invest, to invest into Realty Shares or something, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Yeah, because that's a pretty safe bet too. I think they would be a good way, even if you want even less time commitment than maybe a rental property, but you still want your money to work for you. I think that could be really good. I, like I said, don't have any personal experience with it, but if you can put your money there and it makes you more than, you know, the S&P will, then why not? You're still kind of involved in real estate. You're still learning a little bit, and you've got your money working for you in real estate, but you've got virtually no time commitment. All you do is cut the check and then, you know, get the return. So it could definitely be good for someone that can't make the time commitment, but still wants to get involved.
Yeah, as long as they do their due diligence, read up on it, on Google, YouTube, you know, they're always talking about these sites anyway. So make sure that if you're going to get into it, you know what you're doing. Yep, so Igor, what are your favorite books now? I know you have an ebook. Can you talk about that one? Because Grace told me about it. So, yep. And I read it. It's really good. So if you could talk more about your ebook and some of your favorite books that you like.
Mm-hmm. So I'll go into the books that I like first. Definitely, if you guys haven't read Rich Dad Poor Dad, that's the first one that I read that really flipped my mindset. And I think a lot of investors that I hear on other podcasts also, they're like, Rich Dad Poor Dad was the one that kicked it off for me. But Rich Dad Poor Dad's great. Think and Grow Rich is awesome. The Alchemist by Paul Coelho. The Magic of Thinking Big, David Schwartz, that's a great book. Power of Positive Thinking. The Greatest Salesman in the World by O.G. Mandingo. That's actually probably, I would say that's my favorite one going back. I don't know why it's number six, but The Greatest Salesman in the World by O.G. Mandingo. It's not necessarily a real estate book, but it's awesome. So that one, and then, I don't know, man, there are so many. Anything that has Millionaire in the title is good.
How about, so talk about your ebook.
Yeah, so my ebook, it's just a really short thing. It's not really like much of a book. It's the 6 characteristics of badass entrepreneurs. So it's just 6 little bullet points and kind of a description of each point. And then also at the bottom, I've got book recommendations on each chapter that kind of relate to that chapter. So if you're looking for more book recommendations and just want like a quick little read, you can find that ebook on www.theigorkaj.com. So theigorkaj.com. You'll be able to download it there. It's free and could be a good resource. You know, like I said, other book recommendations in there as well.
No, that sounds good. So final question is, where can people find you?
Yes. Yeah, so you can find me on Instagram at the Igor Cash. So I'm the Igor Cash anywhere, and I'm the only Igor Cash. So,
so on Facebook, that's Cash with a K.
Yeah, K-A-J. Kind of sounds like cash.
Oh, gotcha.
K-A-J, so it's the Igor Kaj, T-H-E-I-G-O-R-K-A-J. So you can email me if you'd like at info@theigorkaj.com. On Instagram, I'm the Igor Kaj. Facebook, I'm the Igor Kaj. YouTube, you can find me. I have a couple of videos up there too. So Igor, the Igor Casual across the board.
All right. Sounds good. Listen, Igor, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be on P2P Real Estate. And for all you guys, please go to iTunes, look for P2P, that's peer, the number two peer, subscribe and leave a review. Also, you can find me on bboxradio.com. I'm there every Wednesday from 6 to 7. Igor, I had to have him earlier than that. He wanted to wait. Igor, I had like a schedule of calls or visitors in the studio for I think the next 6 to 8 weeks.
Oh my God.
I didn't want to wait. I just had to like definitely get you, especially after Grace's recommendation. So I got to thank Grace later on.
Awesome.
So yeah. So anyway, Igor, thank you so much for being again on P2P Real Estate. We're definitely going to talk soon, and listen, have a great day.
Dude, thank you so much, Willie. It's been great, man. We have definitely have to do some business together. We'll definitely catch up.
I would love to. And listen, I don't mind, you know, I'm an older guy, so I'm a good student. So don't worry about that.
Hey, look forward to it. Thank you, guys.
All right. Thank you, Igor. Take care. Bye.